Keller Williams, Reel 11.
There was always one way of finishing a meeting. If you really felt you've got to get home, if possible, before I was too dark, or get to a rest house, because I stayed a lot in rest houses, because they were sort of safe place to go to, or district officers' wives or something. But if you wanted to finish a meeting, there was one certain way of doing it, and that was to stand up and with a beaming smile say, "Now we will have a photograph." And everybody would go out and stand up, looking absolutely as if the last trump had been sounded, and they were grim, because grim was the way you had the photograph took. And they all had grim faces, and it was the only time I ever got a laugh, a really good WI meeting laugh, was on one occasion when my Malay got mixed up, and instead of saying, "Smile, please," I said, "Shut up." And they were all so astonished at being told to shut up, they all burst out laughing. And I got a word, that was the only time I ever got a really good laughing photograph. The rest of them were so serious, it just wasn't true. But it worked. It worked.
It's an incredible idea, really, isn't it, of Lady Templar, you know, in that culture, to take the Women's Institute, as it were. What was it to do with keeping the population pacified?
Yes, it was to keep their minds off the war, particularly the Malay villages, which were very vulnerable. You see a Malay village that was out in the sticks somewhere, a band of guerrillas could come down and knock the whole village out before they knew where they were. And it was a way of keeping them off. I had trouble with Lady T on one occasion, because I got into a Chinese village and they wanted an institute, and it was a very communist village, and Lady T said no, she wasn't having any communists in the Women's Institute. And I said, well, we were supposed to be democratic, we were supposed to be getting everybody in. She said, with the guerrilla war going on, I mean, she's probably quite right, guerrilla war going on, we couldn't have communists as an institute. We could have Chinese institutes, but they weren't, they've got to be a fairly democratic lot, not a communist lot. The coronation took place while I was in Malaya. And we decided that the Women's Institute, we'd got to have a float in the coronation procession. So we managed to get a lorry from somewhere, and we decided we'd have to have the six nationalities on the float. I managed to get hold of a Welsh costume, because the British hadn't got a costume. I mean, a dirty Macintosh is a British costume. I managed to get hold of a proper Welsh costume with a proper hat and the scarlet petticoat and everything. And we had an Indian and a Malay and a Chinese. I think we had a Gurkha. We probably had a couple of Malays, I think. But we did the whole lot. We had sewing, we had cooking, we had gardening, we had bathing the baby. We redecorated the float elegantly with Women's Institutes and all that. The procession was 2 miles long, and I had had great difficulty in getting a Chinese who would come on the float. Really difficult to get in. And finally I found an absolutely charming Chinese who said, oh yes, she'd be delighted to come. And she was bathing the baby, because by that time we'd be a partner, and she was bathing the baby. And we set off on the procession. We set off at half past, I think it was 5 o'clock the procession started, because it gets dark at about 6. And at 6:30, the whole of the procession came to a stop, because it was Ramadan and the Malays were going to have their breakfast. And so for about 3/4 of an hour, the procession completely stopped while the Malays had their breakfast. And Then we started off again, and I was on it because I was sort of part of this work, and I couldn't understand why we were such a popular float. I mean, after we were all women, Malaya was very much a masculine country, but we were terribly popular. All the way along, we got cheers and people clapping and so on and so on. And I thought, oh, the Women's Institute really is coming home. And it wasn't until the next day that I realised that our Chinese was a prostitute of Kuala Lumpur. Bathing the baby. It was very successful. And Gerald, of course, had gone and come back from coronation because he was carrying something for the Queen. I forget what he was something practically important anyway. He was carrying something for the coronation procession. And he was able to get hold of the news wheel on the whole of the coronation. And he flew back to us 2 days later, and we all went into Government House, and we had the newsreel of the coronation, with Gerald giving the commentary, and it was lovely to be writing in it right at the sort of beginning like that. There were bits of it that were very funny because the fire brigade was going to do a magnificent display of fireworks with lights, so that we got the fire brigades, thingy dogs, and all the rainbows from it and everything. It was going to be absolutely marvellous, and they were going to hold it in Main Park in KL. And the night before it was due to happen, somebody let the plug out of the lake. And all that was in the lake was mud. Poor fire brigade, we were so sorry for them, because they'd gone to so much trouble about it. The best one, I suppose, was Taipei, where they had a lovely lake in Taipei, and it was very much on the edge of sort of Chinese population there. It wasn't Chinese, but there were enough Chinese there. And so we had a procession of dragons on the lake. And that was lovely. I was lucky enough to be up there for that. And the dragons were floating all around the lake, belching fire and smoke and everything. And all wonderful, undulating dragons. It was absolutely wonderful. It was good being out there for that. I missed the coronation here, of course, but we got a bit of it there. And
Well, was there any worry about the gorillas? You know, during those celebrations, was there a lot of security?
There were always soldiers everywhere, and there were always police everywhere. But I don't think it would have taken a very bold gang of gorillas to come into KO that night, I think. And when we got up into the hills, it was much more a community business, and therefore the guerrilla side of it wasn't very important. I think it would have taken a very bold lot of guerrillas to come into KL during that procession.
Did you ever come near the guerrillas, or were they ever near you?
I just don't know. One just went and did what one could, and as far as I know, you see, the roads were just too bush, and what was in the bush, I mean, you just didn't know.
Did it give you an idea of what the troops were facing, you know, in the jungle, the jungle warfare?
It gave you a very good idea of because very often, you see, one had to walk into the villages, To get into a village, you couldn't always drive in because there wasn't anywhere to drive. So you had to go through jungle to get to it. So you got a very good idea of the jungle side of it. And
would you have had protection You know, when you were walking, did you always have someone with you?
Unless I picked up a stink or... But you see, what you had to do, what we had to do always, if you were driving there, was you checked in at the police station as you left, and you checked in at the next police station along the road. And if they had communication, and therefore, if you hadn't arrived, then something had happened. So you always felt, from that point of view, you felt fairly safe, but it did mean that you did have to check in all the time to prove that you were still around. But it was... I've always been grateful to that military attaché for telling me what one was not expected to do, because while I was out there, somebody came out from the WI here, and one of the big wigs, and I took her around to show her some of the institutes, and we got up to Alor Star, which was right up on the border, and she said she wanted to go across the border. And she was my boss in England, but she wasn't my boss there. And she was never as affable again after I told her she wasn't to go. And I said she just wasn't to go, because we were asking for trouble again. And I don't think she ever really understood it, the fact that there was a war on, and we were part of it.
There were a lot of national servicemen, I think, were there not?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you see them yourself?
I saw some of them, yes. Some of them were working with Gerald. And I think a lot of them enjoyed the fact that they had not just had to do national service in the UK. Some of them, I think, were finding it a bit much, because... by that time, you see, some of them were mother's boys. And I think they were... I think some of them were finding the problems. I mean, charging through wet fields with leeches and one thing or another. I think some of them, I think, were finding it a bit much. But most of them, I think, felt that this was an opportunity that they would never have had if they'd been in the UK. And from that point of view, I think most of them, I think, enjoyed it. Although they not necessarily enjoyed it, but at least appreciated what they were doing.
Gerald Templer, it seems you had a close relationship with him, a very friendly relationship, is that right?
Oh, yes.
Could you tell me about him, what sort of man he was?
He didn't accept fools gladly. He wasn't very big. He was... very outspoken, very peppery, an intrepid leader of men. I mean, he made a damn good job of it out there. I don't say he's out about it, because he brought it under control. And the Mrs. Lady Waddeston, Mrs. Waddeston. Anyway, it was a Waddeston that took over after him. And he took over a more or less pacified country. Lady T, when she got her WIs going, threw her energies into the hospitals, and she reorganised a lot of the hospitals out in Malaya while she was there. Not only ones for the military, but ones for the local civilians as well. She did a very good job. She was. I kept up with her for years afterwards. Long after her husband died, I still kept up with her. We hit it off. She was fun, because when she had through garden parties and things, of course one always had to wear a hat. And I was almost the only woman in the European community who had a hat. And when I left, she said, "Are you taking your hat with you? Because I've seen it on so many people, I shall miss it." She was that sort of fun. I kept up with her long, but she lived in London, and I'd gone back to working in London. Anyway, I was around, and I saw her quite a lot. She was somewhere in the Swain district, Swain Square. and I enjoyed it.
These WIs, you know, with the your meetings that you had, you know, when they had been going for a few times, particularly, you know, a few months, a length of time, particularly the grassroots one, what had they done to the WIs to make them their own, sort of Malay, rather than, say, the British ethos?
Because they had taken responsibility from the beginning. And because they had taken that responsibility, it was up to them to make it work. And it worked.
And did they bring their own culture into it? You know, were they... did they make it very much a Malay WI?
Well, I suppose to a certain extent. They all of them made it. There was still a certain amount of pattern about it, that they got some education out of it, out of each meeting. There should be some education of some sort, either a practical or a theory or something. Anyway, they had to get education out of it. They had to get some fun out of it, if we could have some games or silly games, like pass the hat around or, you know, simple games. But looking back on it, it was the ones that started themselves that finally were the ones that kept going and are still, to a certain extent, still going. I give the district officers' wives full marks, most of them, for doing something outside their normal sort of activities and trying to make it work. One of them, who had been terribly worried about her village, gave a meeting on birth control, and it was a howling success, and they asked for another one, and there were 200 at the next meeting on birth control, and that was the last one, because we had to clamp down on it. It was a Malay country, and birth control was not part of Malay culture, and we had to clamp down very hard on that one. Whether they ultimately got round to some of it or not, but the men, we'd never got very far if the men were doing that. What we did have while we were there, we had the boss of the Associated Countrymen of the World came out. She was an Australian, and she came out to us ostensibly, more than ostensibly, to get the Malay WIs to be part of the Associated Countrymen of the World. And I, at the time, was dead against it, because we were having enough difficulty with our institutes to get them nationally minded, let alone internationally minded. Ultimately, they did become part, they did join up with the Associated Countrymen of the World, but I thought that they were trying to take off too much to chew at the same time. So, it gave one so many opportunities. I was over in the East Coast when the turtles came in to lay their eggs on the Dungan beaches. I mean, it was so much that one enjoyed so much. Going round a corner one night, going round a gap, the thing was at the top, and there was a tiger asleep on the road. Now, where would you find a tiger asleep on the road? The road was warm, it was a cold night, he was lying flat out across the road, taking the warmth out of the road. No, I was so lucky to go to Malaya for that trip. And of course, practically everything else has followed on from that. And that followed on from the war. And so it's just all followed.
Mm-hmm. Well, did that become a pattern for other countries? You know, the fact that the WI had worked so well in Malaya, did they then sort of extend it to other third world countries?
I don't know that necessarily third world. There was a very good one in Rhodesia, but that was white run. There was a good one, there was a good WI in Trinidad. That is local. That's a local one. That was very much a local one. But, you see, a lot of countries have their own organisation for rural women. And therefore, in many places, there wasn't a need for WIs. You see, Kenya's got Mandalayo. Ceylon has got Lanoke or something like that. I never get around it. But that's their rural one. Mandalayo is the Kenya rural one. Zambia is the YWCA is the rural one. Tanzania is the YWCA. Ghana for a time it was the Bell Guides, but then I think it became to a large extent the Y. But they've all had, most of them have got something. And if it wasn't something which was a voluntary organisation, then it was a women's organisation that was politically accredited. I could never get a YW started in Sudan, because the women's organisation in Sudan was accredited to the government, and they weren't going to have any interruption from anybody. When I was in Ghana, we were lucky in that our Ghana president was a High Court judge. She was the first black High Court judge in the world, and she had a tremendous status, because the women's organisation there was political under Kwame Nkrumah, and they wanted to shut us down. And it was only the fact that we got Annie as our president, and Annie could stand up to anybody, that as a women's organisation. Everything else, the Girl Guides had gone, the Boy Scouts had gone, the Boys Brigade had gone, the Girls Brigade had gone, and Nkrumah squashed the lot, and it was all political. The only non-political was us. And every day at lunchtime, because we had an open cafeteria for lunch, we always had a little Nkrumah spy sitting in the corner, seeing who was saying what to who, and who was meeting who, and so on. And if you wanted to say anything, the only place you could really say it was just from out to sea. And if you really wanted to say something that was utterly and completely private, you went down to the beach, got into your bathing costumes, and went out to sea. Otherwise, it was very tricky while we were there. But the WI has, the Malay WI did very well, in spite of all the drawbacks and the handicaps and the difficulties of getting to it and getting stuff and so on. But they enjoyed it, and it was fun, and the Malays would laugh. That was the main thing. They would laugh. And the Gurkhas would laugh. And if you can get an audience or a group laughing, you're all right, you can get away with it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it achieved the aim? Did it help take their minds off the emergency?
No doubt about it at all. It contributed, I would say, very largely to the stability of the country afterwards. In one respect, the WI was introducing democracy into the villages. All right, we still had our chiefs, and the chief was still the one that mattered. But the fact that we were electing people, that we were working as a group democratically, I think must have contributed a great deal to the stability of the country afterwards. And also the fact that as an organisation, we were trying to get all the different rules and nationalities together. I don't say that it always worked, but at least they met each other and talked to each other at the top level, even if it wasn't the same at the bottom level.
And that, I suppose, is a very important thing for stability and peace, isn't it?
Yeah. To be able to talk, be able to recognise that somebody is not automatically hostile, I think is very important.
Have you been back since?
Oh yes, several times. And of course the interesting part about going back was that the Women's Institute were running itself. It wasn't a Western oriented thing anymore. They were still doing very much the same sort of thing because that was what still was wanted. But they were doing it themselves. And they were still multiracial. I don't say that the races always worked together very well, but they were still multiracial. But it wasn't being run by the Brits or by anybody outside. It was them, and that's the important thing. They were all right. I charged down and I did a certain amount of sort of consultation and advisory work and so on. But it was them. And not me. And it was such nice to see them pulling their weight. I think that's been the chief thing that I've found with practically all the jobs I've done, has been being able to go back and see, usually, that it's worked all right.